hotel and began to bounce his hand up and down, making a motorboat sound and slinging a lot of bear spit around. Justin, upon seeing his nephew having so much fun, thought maybe Avalyn might get a kick out of the bear as well. I've been accused of a rash act or 17 in my life, but this was seemingly notched up. Thorngrip's demeanor changed swiftly. Avalyn and Justin were about 10 feet away when she turned, quickly pulling away from Wesley. She took 2 large sniffs and bristled. Justin had been so focused on the soft pink baby he was carrying over to the carnivore, he had not taken note of the bear's change. "Far enough, Justin. I was moving to intercede, my arm extended out to physically stop him. I just want the baby to see her," he said, looking at me like I'd kept him from the balloon twister. "No closer." Nicole had backed away as well, sensing the shift. Maybe it was me, but I got the distinct impression that bear was afraid. A scared chipmunk is one thing. They'll scurry off. A scared bear? Well, I'm not sure. "What's the matter, girl?" Harold asked, as he saw what had my attention. Justin, back away. "It's just a baby," he said, as if we needed the point reiterated. Avalyn was staring at the bear, and not in any sort of curious baby way either. I could just about see the wheels in her head turning as she was thinking. Thorngrip snorted again and stomped her right paw down hard. I, for one, heard, "Stay away. Better yet, get away from me or I'm going to crush that baby." "She's just a baby." Justin was getting mad, like he was offended by the bear's preference to Wesley. She was a baby, no doubting that. But she was more as well. We just didn't know what yet. Were we like kids running around with sparklers in a dynamite factory? You know, it's all fun and games until shit goes boom. The scene was getting increasingly tense. Justin had wisely, if not happily, moved away, but Thorngrip had not calmed. If the bear charged, we would be hard-pressed to stop her. Most likely several of us would die trying, but we'd try nonetheless. "We should be going," Mabel said. Riley and Ben-Ben said their goodbyes. Patches sat on the roof of one of the cars. Her tail swished back and forth, as if she'd like to say goodbye as well, but that was beneath her. "Zombies are closing." Mad Jack had pulled up our surrounding area again. That was the perfect opportunity to go our separate ways. I wished them luck, and thanked them for saving our asses. "You know where we're at if you need anything," Harold said. I thought Mabel was going to pull out those knitting needle eyes again, even for offering. Did she get the same vibe from Avalyn that Thorngrip had? Or was it merely because Thorngrip had reacted the way she had? "Same," I told him, as I shook his hand. Chapter 2 Mike Journal Entry 2. We'd parted company some 45 minutes previously. Our caravan was now nearly halfway across the state of Massachusetts. I'd had to backtrack and take a detour up Route 190, as what looked like a jumbo jet had completely obliterated all of the lanes and left an impassable crater. We were now crossing the state on Route 2, which put us close to New Hampshire. 2 steps forward and 1 step backwards, and shit. "We going to talk about what we just saw?" Tracy asked. I knew where she was going with this, but I didn't want to go down that road. "Yeah, that was an awfully friendly bear. You think she was a circus animal? Seems strange that she would be that all right around people." "Mike, I don't think it's right, circuses having animals, especially since most treated them pretty bad or were at least neglectful. Big animals need space." "I can punch pretty hard," she said. This I knew. We'd played a game or two of slug bug, and I would lightly tap her on the shoulder when I saw one, and she would generally hit back the same way, unless she was losing. Then I got some of the full brunt of her poor sportsmanship, like she was trying to make up for her lack of numbers with force of contact. Travis was even worse when he was playing football in school. He actively looked for Volkswagens and took it as a challenge to deliver as jarring a jolt as he could every time he saw one. Got so that I flinched every time there was oncoming traffic. "What specifically do you want to talk about?" I asked. I learned this tactic a long time ago. When a woman says she wants to talk, it is extremely better to let her clearly initiate the discussion. I cannot tell you how many times I stupidly opened with things that weren't relevant, and there's no getting those worms back in that can. Once her real agenda had been settled, we would then have to talk about my presumed topics. The baby. That huge bear was afraid of that baby. Her name is Evelyn. Don't. Not just yet. I don't want to get attached to it just yet. It, I asked. You're avoiding the issue. Sure am, I said, proud that I was being honest, as well as clearly understood. An 800-pound bear was scared of an infant. Don't you think maybe we should be too? She asked. It's cause for concern, I agree. But what do we do about it? We can't just leave her on the side of the road. Tracy was quiet. Too quiet. Woman! What? That baby is nothing to us. There's something off about her, the way she peers at you like she knows what's going on. I don't care if it's selfish or not, Michael. I'm not willing to risk the well-being of my family for what could be a zombie baby. I wasn't sure what I could say here. I was cautious of the baby. Maybe wary is a better word. What if I argued for her and she did end up hurting someone, even inadvertently? Tracy would never forgive me. But she was still a baby. She cooed, drank milk, formula in this case, fussed, all the things you would expect an infant to do. Did we even try to test her? Did we, I don't know, find some tripe or entrails and see what she thought about that? I mean, if she started digging into some disgusting shit, then I might have to reevaluate my stance. As of now, she looked like a normal, weird-staring, bear-scaring baby. I'm not sure what you want me to say here, I told her. Nicole was in the car with us. Dad, you know I usually have your back, right? But she was born after Wesley, and she's already bigger. What's that mean? It's not like you're a large woman, I weakly argued. And who's going to tell Justin that we're leaving the baby? He's grown mighty fond of her. Too fond, Tracy threw out there. I don't even know what that means, I said. Somewhere in him he still houses the virus, right? Was what she said. Wouldn't it make sense he would want to protect her? I'm not saying it's a conscious thing. You're saying that instinctually the virus in him is protecting the virus within her. I hated that I'd said it because it made sense. You know, Justin, you give that argument, you'd better be prepared. We tell him we don't want the baby in the group anymore. He's likely to leave with her. What about Dano? What about her? She'd take care of it. We force her out with the baby. What the? You two are scaring the shit out of me. You'd loose that psychopath on a baby. And what about her makes you think she'd do it? Leave and watch the baby. She's not a baby. Wesley is a baby. Zachary is a baby. That thing is an abomination, and I wish you'd never brought it back. Well, that was out there. We're going to stop this conversation now because I'm not going to do anything about it today and probably not tomorrow either. I'm not going to do anything to, with, or about that baby until I get a reason to. I swear to you, Mike, if you wait until it's too late and she hurts someone, it will be a moment you regret forever on more than one front. I almost pulled the car over. Her response was so visceral and charged with animosity. I had just those thoughts, but hearing them spoken out loud made me sick. I wanted to put some distance between us before any real damage was done. Even thought about asking her if she wanted to ride in a different car. Mike, pick up. This is Mad Jack. I'm listening, I told him. We've got about a dozen cars and trucks to our six. How far back? 5.2 miles. They're doing about 80. I was doing 65. About as fast as I dared go on a roadway that had no upkeep and had more than one hazard littered across it. There's an exit 5 miles up. Spread the word. We'll take that and let them go on by. And if they don't? He asked. Fuck me, I muttered. I was getting asked a lot of questions today, most of which I did not have answers for. We'll deal with it when the time comes. Yeah, Mike, wouldn't want to plan ahead or anything. Tracy said with a lingering simmer to her voice. What I wouldn't have given to have a VW pass by just then. No pulled punches this time. What would you have me do? I was getting a little pissed myself. I don't think we can outrun them, and if their vehicles are full, they outman us. Would you rather we circled the wagons and prepared for a fight? She said nothing. Oh, isn't that convenient? Give me crap for making a decision, but then don't offer an alternative. Why I felt the need to push it, I'm not really sure. It's easy to sit back and fault the choices of others if you're never on the hook yourself. And while you're at it, maybe I'm sick of making all the hard ones. Watch where you're going with this, Mike. We do things together. We make decisions together. When you do something, it's because I agree with it. Otherwise, we don't. Hard to argue with that. Now, normally, Tracy and I were on the same page, so things seemed to flow easily enough. It was when we were reading different books that the waters got murky, choppy, and almost hurricane-like. I, wisely, said nothing else. Anything out of my mouth now was mired in gasoline, while Tracy held a blowtorch. I pulled off the highway and followed the sign that assured me Wendy's was in a quarter mile. If only. We pulled behind the long, unmanned drive-through. I've got 3 minutes of feed left, MJ replied. And? BT prodded. It's going to be close if they get to the exit before that, he said. Dino was in her normal pose, pistol on hood, leaning back against the car, head upturned, smoke billowing around her like a protective cloud. It was going to be a tense few minutes. Those that could fight were outside, down behind the cars for just that eventuality. Those that could not were ducked inside for flight if that became necessary. 10 seconds. They slowing down? BT asked. I'd gone to the corner of the building to attempt a visual should they come this way. I was beginning to hate Deneau's viewing box. I'd once considered this gadget to be the greatest gift that could be bestowed upon us, our small advantage. But it also caused me massive indecision. It was constantly making me second guess and alter what little plans I'd felt forced to prepare. Our movements were constantly being directed, or at least heavily weighted, by what we could see in this viewer, and it cost us the power of spontaneous action. Our intuition was dismissed. Now we had to go with what we knew, never again by what we felt. That gut reaction is a powerful human force. Maybe we just weren't supposed to know. It was like those fucking cyclopses that had traded an eye to divine the future, but were tricked into only knowing their deaths. The inevitability of that final drop dictating their lives. Typical Dino. She appears as if she's helping with one hand while the other is honing away at a boning knife she is planning on driving into the side of your neck the second you're of no use to her own plans. I saw BT and Gary coming over. That did not bode well. Dino eyed her pistol to make sure it had not moved. Justin and Travis were setting up a perimeter around the kids. Tracy had just pulled her charging handle back. She threw a glower at me, as if this were somehow my fault. Partly it was. I'd decided to pull over. All things being equal, I'd rather be here than get into it on the highway with no cover. Car metal is pretty thin, and bullets have no problem going through it. Here they come, BT said. It was a large tractor trailer. Allied Moving Company, actually, although I was pretty sure they weren't delivering furniture to the Hamptons. How many you think? He asked, as he rested his barrel on a small cement wall built to hide the trash bin. Tough to say. I can't imagine they've got troops riding in the back of that thing unless it's been retrofitted, so there shouldn't be more than 2 or 3 in each truck. The truck was loud, air brakes booming as it came down the exit ramp. Go right. I urged. It turned left. I don't think they heard you, BT said. I don't see any others. The truck had made the turn and was coming straight toward us, yet there were no other cars behind it. They weren't here for the lunch menu. If they were, indeed, looking for us and knew where we were, it made no sense to bring the one truck, which had stopped suddenly, halfway between us and the highway ramp. They're just sitting there. What are they waiting for? Gary asked. And that was a good question. If they got off the highway to take a piss, which also made no sense, by the way, why were they just sitting in the truck? They looking for a little alone time? BT asked. Shit. Let's go. I tapped BT on the shoulder. Where? It's a trap. The rest of them will be coming around from the other exit ramp. These guys are here to delay us, hem us in, keep an eye on us, whatever. Hold on a sec. BT was thinking. Man, we don't have time for that. MJ, how far to the next exit? BT asked across the small parking lot. 11 miles, he answered. That was the beauty of Route 2, the lack of exits. That's all great and fine, BT, but there's no guarantee they're going to drive all that way. They could be coming through the woods right now from the highway while we're sitting here. They're going to drive. They're overconfident and cocky. Add in a little dose of lazy. How the hell do you know? I asked. Because I was a cop. Victimizers always think they are one step ahead of their victims. Plus, criminals are just fucking lazy. They'd rather take from others than do for themselves. That's how I know. There's no way they're hiking. I'm listening. We leave Deneau here, maybe with Gary, to keep an eye on who is in that truck, and so they can report back that we're waiting them out. Then you, me, Tommy, and a few others go out to meet these assholes on our terms. Lots of unknowns, buddy. Like, what if there are more men in the back of that truck, or those two have a grenade launcher? And even if they have more traditional arms, and it's only the two of them, we have no idea what the rest of us are going to be running into. I had depended on that real-time view screen long enough to fear the unknown. And BT called me out on it. Never seen you afraid of a fight, Mike, BT said. I don't like having all these non-combatants in the fold. It changes the dynamic. Gary and Deneau get overrun. There's not much left to mount a defense. So we doing this? He asked, already knowing I was just spinning my wheels here. Of course, I'm leaving one of my boys here too, though. I'd feel better. And I've got a feeling Justin won't want to leave that baby behind. Chapter 3. Mike, Journal Entry 3. We backed away from the wall slowly. I laid out my simple plan, and then we took a small side road that cut away from the truck and any possible prying eyes. We were making a good clip, and I was doing the math of the other trucks rolling the 11 miles to the next exit, how far they would dare to come back before the noise of their engines gave them away. Figured they would stop a mile and a half, maybe 2 miles away, and then sneak the rest of the way in on foot. We set up our ambush about a mile away from the Wendy's, and we had to really hump it to beat my estimated time of their arrival. Holy shit, Dad, you been working on your cardio? Travis asked as he leaned against a tree to catch his breath. Tommy looked as if he'd gone for a stroll. BT was walking it off, making sure from my angle I couldn't see the heaving in his chest. Meredith may or may not have retched behind a large oak. I would have answered my son, but I had a stitch in my side that was threatening to rip open. And what about those little warnings from the body? Who needs them? About as useless as the nutritional information on a Twinkie. Let's be honest, you know what's in it just by looking at that creamy filling. Maybe reading the labels, skipping all the big chemical words, makes you feel like you give a shit, but you're still gonna eat the Twinkie. Hell, there's a death warning on the side of cigarettes. They were the first things looted from the shops. When we were finished breathing like a pack of horned-out high schoolers coupled up under the bleachers, we got into positions with great lines of sight to the roadway. I wasn't overly thrilled with shooting people before the hostilities started. As of yet, they had done nothing to us. But their intention? Well, that was certainly suspect. You don't just randomly come up on somebody's ass, take their exit, then block their retreat with your intimidating vehicle without expecting some sort of preemptive strike. Especially now. We didn't have the luxury to ask them what the hell they were up to, nor was there anyone we could call for help if their intentions were nefarious. We'd clicked off enough time that the pre-jitters of an upcoming conflict began to wear off, and as the adrenaline faded, tiredness began to set in. Travis yawned. Something's wrong, I said to BT. Just lazy, man. They're taking their time. I thought on his words for a second. No way, man. If they spent the time and resources to set this up, they wouldn't be so casual about the end game. I think we need to get back. I was looking in the direction of the fast food restaurant, though I could not see it. I was getting the sinking feeling we'd been duped and had left the rest of our people hung out to dry. "I see something," Tommy said. A figure began to appear, still far off, but I could only make out one. "There's more," Travis said, as we all tried to get a better look. I had my four-power scope up to my eye and was still having a hard time figuring it out when it came to me. That was when the panic set in. "Rats," I hissed, though I meant to shout, "Rats! Thousands of them!" "What the fuck?" BT asked as he was looking. "Are they attacking that guy?" "We have to go," I grabbed my stuff and was heading out. "Not being attacked, he's leading them like the fucking Pied Piper." "Oh, oh no." BT was pretty alarmed. "I hate rats. That's two of us, and probably 90% of the population." "That's what's in the trucks?" Meredith asked, but it was the answer as well. "Who does that?" BT asked. It was the last question he would be able to get off as we were once again sprinting at full, back the way we had come. When the first rat ran out into the roadway ahead of us, I didn't think much of it. Figured a small animal by itself would run away as soon as it saw us scary bipeds running its way. But it didn't. It turned and came right at us. All I could think was maybe it had rabies. Then I was thinking with growing conviction that it was even somehow more insidious. The ape at the Demency building had the zombie virus. It was not out of the realm of possibilities this rat did as well. What new horror would this be? How could people survive? Here was an animal that could get just about anywhere, one that had proven itself through time to be extremely clever, bold, and adaptive. I raised my rifle up, but the odds of hitting the damn thing while we were both running were as likely as a lawyer turning down a frivolous lawsuit, a politician turning down a donation, and if I wanted to be more relevant, Trip turning down a spliff. Rats began to pour out of the woods to our right. No one thought twice when I veered left. We heard gunfire up ahead. The trap had been sprung, and we had arrogantly and blithely walked right into it. Hell, I think we even pulled the lever to spring it while we whistled a catchy tune. I knew rats were fast, at least in bursts, a trivial pursuit question I got wrong. If we could stay ahead of them, theoretically they couldn't catch us. But we weren't really ahead of them if the truck at Wendy's had already let go of its bubonic plague-carrying cargo, and odds were stacked that they had. We were fucked, and there was no way our view screen could have seen this. "Get in the cars, get out of there," I told Justin before we left. The plan was, if they got into trouble, to get the fuck out and come pick us up, but we had already deviated from the plan they were supposed to meet us on. We'd pass like ships in the night. Luckily, I had prepared for Plan C. "Plan B," you ask? Well, that was just to use more ammo. Unfortunately, in this case, it wouldn't do any good. "Tommy, the backpack." I think it was Trip that had come back with a flare gun from a foraging mission. I didn't see the good in it back then. I mean, unless we ended up looking for a rescue at sea. As it was, we already had enough shitty things looking for us. Didn't need to announce our position by shooting a big red neon open sign into the sky. Tommy got in front of me as we ran, fumbling with the thing, just about putting a burning canister into his thigh. Pretty sure he would have been pissed off about that. The gunfire tapered off. Had to think they were retreating to the cars. I fired the flare, never even wondering if they'd be able to see it from where they were. There was the screeching of tires, and then more gunfire. There was a squeal of brakes, and then the gut-wrenching sound of metal impacting something unyielding. BT looked over at me, and I don't know how we found another gear, but we were racing to the wire. The flare went unnoticed as a car sped by one street over. Attempting to cut them off was fruitless. They were already past our location, and the rats streaming into yards to our side would prevent that anyway. We got to the parking lot just as a dazed and bleeding Gary was being shoved into a car that Deneau was driving. She looked over at us as soon as the door slammed shut and screamed out of the parking lot. Of all the ones getting screwed, we were first up. There were rats everywhere. I can't blame her for not picking us up. Well, I could, but we both knew she wouldn't have made it. I tapped BT's shoulder. Off to the side was a two-story home that had been converted into apartments. At least that's what I figured, judging by the metal fire escape. BT didn't even need to jump as he reached up and pulled the ladder down. We about tossed Meredith up there, and Travis was right behind her. BT went next, as Tommy and I had to shoot to keep the nasty little fucks from biting us. Mounds of ground were being blown up, taking scores of rats with each strike. But still they came, their beady black eyes locked on, their long, sharp teeth intent on sinking into our flesh. One had jumped onto my leg and was climbing up fast. I grabbed him around the body and squeezed until his lungs burst forth from his mouth, literally. It was just as gross as it sounds. I flung it away and spun to grip the ladder. Tommy cried out as he was bitten on his calf. He reached down and smashed two of them together with enough force to create one disgustingly large and bloody multi-legged rat. BT was hoisting the ladder that Tommy and I were still on. Travis was smashing away with the butt of his rifle at the animals that had hitched a ride. Took a moment to catch my breath and look out at the sea of swirling vermin. A bunch were looking up at us, figuring how to solve this puzzle. A fair amount already had. Inside! Being out on this metal platform made us perfect targets for any shitstorm. Fucking Dano saw us, man. She fucking left us here on purpose, BT was yelling as he was moving furniture to block the doorway. This must have been a rough part of New Hampshire, if such a thing existed, because the door was metal. Not metal all the way through, but enough to stop anything from chewing its way in. It was 50-50 if she could have got to us, maybe a little less. She definitely weighed the odds, and without being a clear favorite, we were always going to get left behind, I said. We wouldn't have fit, Tommy was checking the window. Still, man, I would have ridden on the fucking roof. Now we have to deal with rats, man. BT was losing his mind. I had a healthy fear of the animal, that was for sure, but it was obvious to see that this was one of the big man's phobias, and he was not coping well, and it didn't get any better as we heard the pitter-patter of thousands of feet coming down the wooden hallway. Meredith looked at me. Go find some Valium in the bathroom, I told her. What makes you think they have Valium? You're going to find some, I was nodding my head. Travis, go with her. Do a quick check of this place. It wasn't large by any stretch of the imagination. It appeared to be one bedroom in the back, a bathroom, and then the kitchen-living room combo. Although it looked much more spacious now that we had the entertainment center, couch, and kitchen table stacked up against the door. They actually had some, she came out a moment later, already more relieved. Really? I asked. She looked at me like the idiot who doesn't get his own joke. You just told me to pretend I found some Valium, and now you're thinking I really did? Wishful thinking. Go be that convincing to him. BT was next to Tommy, though he was not looking out the window. He had his head pressed against the wall. Uncle Meredith wanted me to give these to you. Meredith opened her hand to reveal two small reddish pills. What are they? He asked, never looking directly at them. Valium. She'd barely said the word when he grabbed them and dry-swallowed. I motioned for her to come over. That was good, don't mistake me, but what did you actually just give him? I'd hoped she'd found some baby aspirin or something useful, but that wasn't what the pills looked like. She handed me the bottle. Bisacodyl? Oh, no. Did I just poison him? Meredith looked scared. Nope, probably the rest of us, though. Those are laxatives. Nothing here worth mentioning, Travis said, coming out of the bedroom. Dad! Come in, Dad, where are you? Are you all right? It was Justin. I could hear his muffled voice coming through the backpack. Tommy tossed me the entire bag. I nearly toppled over when I caught the much heavier-than-anticipated bag right in the chest. The radio was once again asking where I was when I finally got to it. We're fine, I began, before looking over to a concerned Tommy. Fine-ish. How are you guys doing? We're okay. You weren't at the rendezvous point, but we saw a thousand reasons as to why. Ran over a bunch of them. Would have kept doing it, but there were also trucks and people with guns. We're at... I cut him off. Don't say it over the radio. It's not secure. How are we going to find each other? We're not currently in any shape for travel. Give us a few minutes to figure something out. Few minutes? BT asked. You're going to get us out of here in a few minutes. Valium should be taking hold about now. I hoped the suggestion would quell the rising panic within him. I am feeling a little woozy, he confessed, just as his stomach began to gurgle. Nerves. He grabbed at his waist. Keep safe, Justin. I'll contact you when we can. This was killing me. We were scattered to the winds at the moment, and there wasn't a damn thing I could do about it. Uncle, Meredith said. She was by the door. You need to hear this. I thought I was going to have to cup my ear and listen intently, blocking out all distractions. But I was only halfway across the room when I heard the crunching. Chewing. I'll be damned, they're chewing through... not the door, though. The walls, she answered. I didn't think of that. I thought about doing the math, but I'd never ran across a word problem that involved the speed at which 100 rats can chew through 2 sheets of drywall framing and insulation while 3 humans are swatting and shooting at them. Any ideas? We could set the place on fire, she replied. And I don't think she was kidding. You didn't need to have what BT suffered from, true musophobia, to not like the fact that you were about to die by 1,000 tiny bites. This house is old enough it should have lath and plaster walls, Tommy said. That'll slow them down, though I doubt it'll stop them, I said, thinking about the thin board material and the plaster slathered between them to keep homes insulated. It was a whole mite better than the pink stuff, for this application at least. But it was still only a waiting game. The fuckers can chew through brick if they have enough time. Gotta be some asbestos in the walls, right? I asked. I don't think they're gonna die from mesothelioma before they get in here, if that's what you're getting at, Meredith said. Next time, try not to be so smart. The world doesn't need 2 Talbots like you, she said. Even in as dire a situation as we were, Travis could not help letting a snort out. Sorry, he put his hand up when he saw me looking at him. I was trying to figure out our next move when I noticed that BT was no longer in the room. Bathroom, Tommy said. Oh, Lord, what is happening to me? BT cried out. Now, I won't swear it on a stack of Bibles, but I think the house shook from the force of his, bathroom volley, if you will. Is that my liver? He asked, alarmed. Talbot, he yelled. I looked at Meredith. He's talking about you, Miss Talbot. Might not have to worry about the rats now, she shrugged. We were all inching farther from the bathroom when we heard a high-pitched whistle. Yoo-hoo! Someone shouted from down below. I fucking said yoo-hoo! It's customary to reply, the voice yelled. Listen, we know you're in there. The rats have been specifically trained, see? They're like good old hunting dogs. They track down and trap prey so that the hunters can blow your heads off. What do you want? Tommy asked from the corner of the window. I wasn't sure if that was the smartest thing, but it was true. They did know we were there. What do I want? Why, the world. It was Knox. Shit. But for now, just you and those with you, specifically. You see, I have a few scores to settle. Lost a lot of good people to your group. 27, to be exact. Wasn't me, Tommy told him. Technically, that was true, though I didn't think Knox would see it that way, or even care. Guilty by association, son. The North Korean government was a little strange in how they ruled, but I do agree with the fact that the sins of the father are passed down to the next generation. Gauging by your age, I'd say that includes you. Can you see him? I asked. He shook his head. Let's get a few things squared up. The rats are highly trained and will kill you if I tell them to. Or I can just set the building on fire. Either way is a pretty gruesome death, don't you agree? So we should just come out then? Tommy asked. That'd be the smartest choice, he said. And you won't hurt us? Oh, I never said that, son, he laughed. The men are going to have to go. I think the values your leadership has instilled into you will prevent you from ever being good soldiers in my army. But the women, they're always valuable. We can use them to repopulate our forces, or maybe just as entertainment. We have children as well, Tommy said. Why don't you just give them our social security numbers and password phrases, I told Tommy. I don't want them either, he replied. I'll tell you what, if we can avoid more bloodshed, I'll let anyone under the age of 15 go about their merry way. So you're just going to kill the men, take our women, and cast the children loose into this murderous world alone. That about it? I asked. Go fuck yourself. I stepped up to the window. Ah, Michael Talbot, I was wondering when you were going to show yourself. Knox stepped from behind a cinder block privacy fence. I know you're thinking about raising that rifle up and taking a shot. Just know that I have at least two snipers trained on you, and whatever armor you used to stop my bullet last time will not be effective against the caliber and ammunition they are armed with. It will rip your body to shreds. You do what I ask, and I promise that as much as I would rather prolong and drag out your death, I will be merciful and put a round into your skull. Personally. Pull me out of the window, I said to Tommy. He'd no sooner wrenched me from my spot when a bullet hole appeared in the floor halfway across the room. Oh, man, Knox shouted. You would have been a wonderful addition to my army. It's a damn fine shame I'm going to have to kill you. There was another whistle, and the rats began their incessant chewing. BT had finally emerged from the bathroom, a much paler version of himself. I feel better now. Relax, Stephen. That always happens when you drop the kids off at the pool, I told him as I got up off the floor. I hate to say it this way, but we're trapped like rats. Anybody got anything they think might work? Lay it out. Meredith was right. We need fire, Travis said. I think we need to start our own fire. Those rats might be trained, but they're not going to stick around for one. It might create enough confusion to escape. Or fry, Meredith said. Got a lighter in the pack? I asked Tommy. He shook his head. Better, he said, reaching over to grab it. He came out with a couple of flares. The rat wall? I asked. Seemed the best place to push them away from. I took one from his proffered hand, popped the cap off, and struck the flint. Think I shoved a few dozen Our Fathers and Hail Marys into a quick prayer session as I held the flare up to a wall that took a surprisingly long time to ignite. Once it did, though, it was game on. Now, if we didn't die from smoke inhalation, we'd be in decent shape. BT was moving the furniture away from the door, as it was our only egress. Smoke was beginning to billow. Who authorized the fire? Knox was shouting. I'll string them up for sedition. Why would anyone follow that man? I asked, as I pulled my shirt up over my mouth and nose in a vain attempt to filter out the worst of it. Everyone get on your hands and knees, I instructed. The air was somewhat better down there, but our options were becoming limited. We were in a very real danger of succumbing to a smoky end. In a few more seconds, we wouldn't be able to find the door either. I reached up and twisted the handle. The rats were almost as surprised as I was. I was staring at hundreds of greedy, beady, hungry eyes. They desperately wanted to reduce me into kibble-sized snacks, but they couldn't get at me. Fear of fire is a primal instinct, one not easily trained out. As smoke poured forth from that door, they began to vacate in droves. Those that didn't, I was swinging my rifle at, and sometimes I would connect with a satisfying crunch of delicate bones. The problem was they weren't skittering like the ship was sinking. They were only backing up as far as the smoke reached, which was going to make our hasty departure anything but. Tommy tossed his flare down the hallway, and again they scattered. Won't they already have this place surrounded? BT asked as we made it to the stairwell. That was a safe assumption. We need to break into another apartment on this floor and go out another fire escape. It'll give us a couple of seconds. They have to be expecting us to come out on the ground floor, I said. You sure about that? No. Just checking, he said. As we came out of the stairwell, he easily shouldered an apartment door open. The stench was unmistakable. We were in zombie-controlled territory. We had our first piece of luck in the fact that the three zombies residing in this apartment were from the beginning. That is, they were slow, mostly uncoordinated, and emaciated. I noticed the carcass of at least one dog and a couple of cats, and I swallowed hard. Maybe a baby, although it had been reduced to gnawed-up bones, so it was difficult to identify it definitively. It was going to be hard to dismiss my suspicion, though, as I couldn't pull my eyes from the toy rattle the unidentifiable hand bones had been holding. It was BT that smashed in the skull of the zombie shuffling my way. Cast iron pan, of all things. I think that was a new one for him, but once again, the old ways saved us. The spray of blood on my face got me in motion. Thanks, I told him. He made quick work of the remaining two. Spun the pan around as if he were considering keeping this new weapon, but he ended up putting it back on the countertop he'd grabbed it from. There's someone on the roof across the street. Tommy was pointing through the slats of the window shade. I don't see anyone else watching this side. It was a doable shot. Not an easy one, but doable. He was on a terrace with a knee wall, exposing his upper chest and head. Now that I thought about it, there was most likely nothing in that short wall that would stop my round. Dumbass, I said, as I rested the barrel of my rifle in the middle of the window frame. Even through the shades, I had him. I was about to shoot when he turned to the side and was looking into the apartment he was outside of. Fuck. What's the matter? BT asked. There's someone with him. You sure? I don't see anyone, BT replied. Well, unless he's related to Trip and has audible conversations with people in his head, I'm going to say, yeah, I'm sure. You could have just said, yes, you were sure. What fun is that, I told him. What part of this is fun to you? Well, none of it, really. BT, you comfortable with that shot, I asked. He looked through the window. I am, but I'm more comfortable with you doing it. I'm going to shoot the second one. How do you know he's going to show? Tommy is going to flush him out, I said, looking over at the boy. We were running out of time. Even with the towel under the door, smoke was beginning to find its way into the apartment. Our avenue of escape was beginning to dwindle. Tommy went a few feet over to another window and threw it open. BT's Mark saw him, yelled something into the apartment, and sighted in. Tommy moved before he could shoot. Come on, motherfucker, show yourself. No time for you to be shy. We waited. The sniper kept his rifle up. He was going to shoot next time anything walked past that window. Have a zombie peek out the window, I said. Just make sure you don't expose yourself. Travis was dragging a body over. This is so gross, he said, as he tried to get a grip on a corpse whose parts were only loosely attached. Meredith grabbed the zombie's other arm, and they managed to get it over by the window, leaving a slime trail nearly 2 feet across in their wake. I've got it, Tommy said, getting low to the ground. He hoisted it up. Its head no sooner passed the sill before it was drilled a new hole. Guy's a crack shot, I said, as Tommy let the zombie fall to the ground. I thought we could maybe just rush the fire escape. It's amazing how many people are just horrible in a firefight. Adrenaline can make getting off the simplest of shots difficult. But not for this one. Had to think he had some military training in his background somewhere. The sniper kept looking through his scope, trying to confirm his kill. Dad, the door is hot, Travis said. He'd gone back to try and restuff the towel to keep more smoke from pouring in. A hot door meant the fire was right outside. If the other guy didn't show soon, we were going to have to take the sniper out and hope his partner was less qualified with a firearm. I looked over. The door handle was beginning to glow. We had minutes. Once that fire ate through the wall or the door, we were on borrowed time. I snorted. That was rich. As if we weren't merely scrounging on borrowed time from the moment the zombies showed. Meredith pointed at the wall as it began to blacken, the paint blistering and falling away. Looked like something straight out of a horror movie. "He's out," BT said. At first, there was so little of the person showing, I couldn't pick him up. Well, the problem might have been that he was a she. Might have let her go if she hadn't been holding a rifle that was nearly as long as she was. Had a feeling she might be the better shot of the two. "Ready?" I asked. "Say the word." "Now." I fired. Almost immediately, BT did as well. My mark had turned slightly just as I'd fired, sending my round into the stock of her rifle. It exploded outward. I don't know how much of my bullet pierced her chest, but she was able to pull herself back into the apartment and out of my view. BT had hit his in a definitive kill shot, somewhere right below the neckline, bursting through the top of the chest plate. The man had at first been pushed backward, but then, because of the way he'd been sitting, he'd fallen forward and was draped over the railing. "She dead?" he asked. "Don't know," I told him, trying to pick her up in my sights. "We need to go now. If she's still alive, she's going to be calling for help." "I'll go first," Tommy volunteered. He shouldered past us, opening the now broken window. He pulled the shade straight off the wall in his haste to be free. Had a feeling the boy, like the rats, had a deep-seated fear of fire. As is right. In fairness, who amongst us wants to be burned alive? Tommy had no sooner gone through the window and onto the landing when a bullet pinged off the metal to his left. "I think she's still alive," BT said as we both tried to find her. "Window," Meredith said, as she sent a couple of rounds of covering fire. Our shooter disappeared. The apartment we were in was getting choking thick with smoke, and now the temperature was increasing. Fire was licking the inside walls as it seeped through the openings it was creating. Travis was keeping an eye on the fire. Transfixed was more like it. "Come on," I yelled at him. "You and Meredith, out!" Tommy had gone down a floor and was scanning for targets. As of yet, the only one that was aware of us was a wounded female with a less-than-serviceable rifle. She stuck the barrel of her weapon out the window and shot a couple of wildly misfired shots that were still entirely too close. Although, if we're being honest, any shot in your general direction is entirely too close. "Rats!" Tommy said. At first, I thought he was using a less cuss-worthy swear. Then I realized he was talking about our four-legged pursuers. Maybe Knox and his men hadn't found us, but his miniature bloodhounds had. The fire was inside our domicile in earnest when BT and I made our way out the window. The woman I'd shot had either succumbed to her injuries or her weapon had. Either way, she no longer fired at us. Tommy slid the rest of the way down, his feet straddling either side of the ladder. The rodents that had found us converged. He was stomping them out of existence in the grossest game of whack-a-mole I'd ever had the displeasure of witnessing. Fire was blowing through most of the windows by the time my feet touched the ground. We were all on the move, the rats included. They were wary, keeping a respectable distance, but not retreating. BT looked over his shoulder more times than an NFL running back making a break for the goal line with the entire opposing team in hot pursuit. We were heading toward a gas station. I took a hard right away from it, had no desire to be stuck in something that could be made into a mile-high mushroom cloud. Headed toward a strip mall and a sub-station sandwich shop. Clearly, this place was attempting to lure customers from its much larger, more successful competitor, Subway, even had the same color scheme and font for the sign. If you were more than 100 feet away from it, you'd swear it was the national chain. The window was kicked out. I immediately ran past it. Tommy was pulling open a heavy-looking door to the Chinese food restaurant next to it. Crystal Ginger, it was called, or something along those lines. The beauty was it had boarded-up windows facing the roadway. Not really sure why this is done at most Chinese food restaurants. I mean, is it because they don't want you to know what they're cooking? Honestly, I don't care, because it's all delicious, but it should have been something I gave more thought to when I used to frequent these establishments. The smell inside was bad. Not zombie bad. Old fermented cabbage and long-gone chicken bad. "Tommy, BT, check the kitchen and the back door. Me and the kids will check out the rest." I threw the lock on the door, hoping we wouldn't need to make a hasty exit. For once, there was no one and nothing after us. BT came out of the kitchen with a box that looked as if it could be used to ship 50-gallon drums. "Fortune cookies," he said happily. "I'm starving." I wasn't a big fan of the edible message holders that tasted suspiciously like they were made from the same material as the aforementioned message. But even through all my worry, I was hungry as well. I grabbed a fistful. Should have known we were playing a game with fate when the first message I cracked open said, "Be wary of those who gnaw at your confidence." And yes, it sure did have a picture of a rat. I put the rest of the cookies down. I'd suddenly lost my appetite. I was listening as Meredith was trying to raise Justin on the radio. What came through was garbled, and we missed every third word. "Mom, Knox, everywhere," was about the gist of it. No matter how much we tried to ask for more information, we were met by radio silence. Now I was about to lose my shit. We were holed up and being pursued, and the worst of it was not knowing how bad of trouble our family was in. "We have to go," I said. "Of course, man, but where?" BT asked. "We'll head out and back and hope our furry friends haven't hemmed us in yet." "Can I bring the cookies? You've been hanging around Trip too much." He tossed the box across the room. I opened the back door cautiously before poking my head out. I did not see anything that led me to believe we were under surveillance. I had not a clue as to where I needed to go. One way was just as good or bad as another. I needed to get closer to Justin, as we were apparently at the edge of effective communications range. But how could I tell which way that was? All was quiet out on the street. I heard no car engines revving, no squealing tires, and no shots being fired. There were birds and crickets chirping all around us. Just another normal day as far as the animal kingdom was concerned. "Hear anything?" I asked Tommy. He shook his head. I was going to move roughly towards our original rendezvous point, making sure to stay a few streets over. We'd traveled for close to an hour. The sun was beginning its downward journey. Meredith had produced a noticeable limp. "You all right, kiddo?" I asked, slowing up to let her get astride. "I found new boots at that outlet mall we checked out a few weeks ago. Don't know why I decided that today was a good day to break them in. I guess I didn't figure we were going to do much running." I wanted to tell her that you should always expect to do a lot of running at any given moment, but I figured that lesson had been learned on the back of a dozen or so busted blisters. Worry was beginning to weigh on us all. The darkening sky mirrored our moods. "You think your sister is all right?" BT asked. I thought it slightly strange that he singled her out above all others. Yet I said nothing. "I hope so," I told him honestly. "What do you think about that for the night?" Tommy asked, pointing to an auto parts store across the street. A good part of me wanted to push on. We'd still heard nothing from anyone else, and now I was worried I had picked the wrong direction. Did I keep senselessly plodding in the same wrong direction, or did I reverse course and backtrack? "Works for me," I said, as I looked up at the flat roofline of the store. The auto parts store was, thankfully, devoid of all things living and undead, and for the most part it had been left alone. The cash register was a broken mess on the floor, and the oil section had been cleaned out, but after that it was mostly clean. I think had I raided this place, I would have taken all the air fresheners, and would probably grab a handful before we left. I went into the back, the mystical land of auto parts, where they seemingly had enough pieces to rebuild every car known to man. At a markup. I once owned a Hyundai. Decent car, but obviously bargain brand. It was $9,400 to buy one. Brand new. At some point, I had needed a special doohickey for the engine, and had gone to an auto parts store to get it and was pissed about the price of the thing. How the man behind the counter knew this, I don't know, but he told me that if I were to build that exact car with the parts I could get there, it would cost $167,000. Talk about getting bent over the counter and being taken advantage of. Oh, screw the political correct shit. That's just getting fucked up the ass without any lube in sight. In hindsight, buying three Hyundais and selling them for parts, running your own scrapyard, so to speak, would pay for you to get a better automobile. Or just use them to repair the first car, much cheaper. Wow, I don't even think there's a point there. But not the first time, I suppose. Anyway, I got what I was looking for in the form of tailpipes, exhaust pipes, and even a few mufflers. What are you doing, Talbot? BT asked. Making a bong. Come on, grab some. Don't go all trip on me. Though he did as I asked. Talk to me, man, he said as I headed outside with my payload. Please don't tell me you had some bizarre childhood trauma involving engine piping and now can't stand to be in the same place with it. Hey, I said, much too loudly. Ham-eating a phobia is a real thing. Did you just make that shit up? And don't even get me started on all the things wrong with a person who doesn't love the delicious smell and taste of ham. I could feel my gag reflex about to work overtime as I listened to him go on and on about the different types of ham and what you could do with it. Part of me felt like we were filming a scene from Forrest Gump 2. At least he was tossing the pipes up to me on the roof. There was a small access ladder that led there. He carried the last few up with him as he was finally finishing up his narrative. Oh, now I get it, he said, as he saw that I had made a message with the pipes. In theory, MJ would be scanning the surrounding neighborhoods, attempting to locate us. If he wasn't, it meant he couldn't. I was unsure as of what our next play might be if that was the case. Wait, does that say suck it? Dude, why? I was running out of pipes. You've got enough up here to write the Gettysburg Address. I was shooting for succinct. I guess that'll work. Nobody else would have left that message except for you. Now? Now we see if they have any disgusting auto parts store snacks. Like, almost a requirement that they have old off-brand things that you can't get anywhere else. What the hell are you talking about? Watch. I didn't look when we came in, but I bet they have one of those old gumball machines. Hasn't been cleaned out since the moon landing. It'll be full of peanuts, Cheerios, or some such shit. And they expected people to put a quarter in it so it would dispense like 7 pieces of old, dirty, German-fested stale food. Who does that? Who gets food from a gumball dispenser? You ever see those things? The tray you place your hand on to get your goodies usually has a layer of grease from all the grease monkeys that have gone before. I'm surprised the tidbits don't get stuck in that gel. What the fuck is wrong with you? I used to look forward to getting red hots when my dad brought me to these places. Might be one of the reasons you're so mad all the time. Maybe you're suppressing some anger concerning your father exposing you to all those toxins. Look at me. Do I look like I was fed a steady diet of toxins? He asked, flexing his muscles. Fuck yeah, it does. I watched Godzilla like 100 times when I was a kid. That was exactly what happened to him. You were such an asshole. I've been called worse. You think we should stand guard? He asked, as I was heading over to the ladder. Wouldn't be the worst idea. I hate that there isn't a direct way up here from inside, though. Get some sleep. I'll take the first 4 hours, he offered. I thanked him and went back in. Travis had busted open the very machine I'd been talking about. Only instead of peanuts, they had some M&M clones, though by the shape of them it was clear they did not have the same type of manufacturing. Looked like candy-coated raisins, if I had to describe them. They were so stale, they were simultaneously chewy, yet dissolved upon hitting the tongue. I had a couple, but only because my son was happy he'd found something food-like and wanted to share. He brought up some to BT. Not sure how long he was up there, but the worry and running had taken its toll on me. I'd found some garage cleanup towels, rolled them into a pillow, and dropped right off to sleep on the polished concrete floor. When BT woke me, I was truly surprised my shift was already up. Damn, that sure didn't feel like 4 hours. It wasn't. You got a couple of hours. We got activity. Shit, I grabbed my gear. We got onto the roof. Could hear more than one engine running. Patrols, I asked. Makes the most sense. Don't know what they know, but that they're close means that maybe some of our people are still around. Might be better if they're still looking for us. I hope our people got away and that eventually MJ will stumble upon our message. This is killing me, Talbot. I love these people. I mean, maybe not Trip and Deneau, but yeah, the rest of them. Any one more than another? I asked, fishing. You're pretty low down on the list, if that's what you're getting at. Oh, I'm at a Talbot, all right, just not me. He didn't answer. I took that as all the confirmation I needed. What the hell is that? BT pointed up into the sky. We both saw blinking green and red lights. That an aircraft or some